Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mboga. This evening, we'll talk about Africa's business strategy and global engagement. And with us tonight is my colleague, Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service. Henok, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hello, Africa.
You're welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to the show. As I said, our topic tonight, we're looking at Africa's multilateral and strategic initiatives, specifically the business strategy for the continent and its global engagement. According to sources, Africa should prioritize trade and industrial sectors to address most of the prevailing challenges the continent faces, including the high rate of unemployment, to ensure sustainable development. That's according to one official from the African Union. Let's start from there, Henok. First of all, there have been trends. What's the general picture now as things stand as far as Africa's business strategy is concerned?
Now, governments, thank you for the question. Governments in Africa, individual countries, or be it in regional blocks, trade and economic development partnerships, and through the African Union as well, have been forced. I use this term forced by the population factor. Africa needs to create 10 million jobs for an ever-expanding, ever-growing youth demography. Now, that means cutting-edge technology, investing in that, also creating capital. Mm-hmm. We're talking about local capital and attracting it, as well as international capital, is very important for these countries. And also, this includes governments and regimes that are even not so democratic.
Yes.
It has become essential for any kind of rule in Africa, any kind of governance structure in Africa, to make sure that jobs are created for the younger population. So in terms of that, it has created this energy, and it has also created an opportunity to do well, to create jobs, to boost economies in Africa. We'll get to the details of how that's being implemented, but the push factor is there, and they have to do it now, and the leaders understand it. The question is how to implement it. There's so many different ways and so many gaps and challenges, but I guess we could discuss that. The push is there.
Suleiman, Henok here mentions the issue of the government's being forced by the high levels of unemployment, more so youth unemployment on the continent. I'm not quite sure, and some people are not quite sure, whether actually the governments there do understand the gravity or the urgency of that issue. Do they? What's your take on that?
They don't seem to understand, but there are so many factors. Number one, the bottom line is, in all these deals, one thing we need to understand is that in 1884, when the continent was divided, when the current states were built by the European powers, the driving factor was the interest of the European countries. Each had an interest to get resources from the continent. The interests of the European countries, or the ones we call developed countries, they have never changed. They are the ones who are also taking the shots. So first of all, they need Africa just as we need them. Let it be that whether we have got problems or we don't have problems, their quest for resources is still existing. And so long as their quest for resources to feed their industries, to feed their other economic requirements is still existing, they will continue to come to Africa. Now, when they come to Africa, do we understand when we enter into the deals? Do we understand the problems? I would say partially the type of leadership which we have is a desperate leadership. It is not focused on the problems which the continent is faced. is facing is more focused on holding themselves to power and benefiting themselves.
I see. I think Henok Suleiman raised that very important issue. There are many analysts and observers who have said Africa doesn't seem to know, or the leadership doesn't seem to know, or is not very good at negotiating these trade deals and the infrastructure deals. There have been complaints between the regional blocs, deals, trade agreements with the EU, for instance. There have been even trade with the United States. And some of these arrangements have led to the failing agricultural sector in Africa because of these tariffs and the subsidies that the Western world gives to their farmers. Those kinds of nitty-gritty in negotiations. What's your general take on the ability of the African governments to negotiate good deals?
I agree with you and what Suleiman said. You know, he went back in history and he was talking about, you know, the Berlin Conference of 1884. No African leaders were invited to that conference when European leaders carved out their interest in Africa. However, right now, we have a choice. Now, whether our leaders are acting upon that choice, whether our leaders are building capacity, and I'm talking about negotiating capacity, human resources who thoroughly understand the interests of multinationals, private equity firms. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Africans who've worked abroad and understand the business interest of these vital partners. I call them vital partners because they bring capital into a capital-starved economy. Most African countries have that problem. So I agree with the two of you when you say, yes, this is a wonderful blueprint. We've talked about blueprints, and then implementing it is it's always difficult. Now, what do we have in terms of development initiatives? We're still working with partners. Partnership is very important. And each and every African country negotiates their own partnerships through bilateral agreements with African countries as well as other countries, Western countries, the US, European Union, in terms of bloc. Now, these negotiations are either conducted at the government level or using international organizations like the World Trade Organization. And there is negotiation processes taking place. There is also attracting private capital. Private capital coming into the African market, foreign direct investment, multinationals being interested, and coming up with a much-needed capital. Now, compare this. These are opportunities. There is interest in, you know, any company coming to Africa is looking at a market that's highly risky in their mind, at least, or in their analysis, because Africa is dubbed as a frontier market, you know, a market where you might win a lot, but you might also lose your investment. So because of some of this, some of them, I think, are misunderstandings because Africa's risk has not been properly studied and mitigated. So companies tend to over-exaggerate the risk that's being taken in Africa and going to work in Africa. Anyways, to keep the whole thing short, I agree with you. Building capacity to negotiate these very important trade deals, these very important partnerships that we're creating with Monsanto, Yara, to develop our agricultural sector, these are very important ones. When we talk about semi-processed industry and retail business, where Walmart has a huge interest in Africa. These are wonderful news, but how we deal with that, how we negotiate these deals, will it's a make or break moment for Africa as a population and for governments as well.
Suleiman, talking about the risks and the idea of negotiations, how about the idea that some people have pointed out that the nature of corruption or the degree of the corruption in some countries in Africa renders the negotiations to be one-sided, in that for them is what is in for them as individuals, what kickback they can get from these multinational corporations or even governments. that they can't strike a good deal for the respective countries?
First of all, Douglas, the rate of corruption, one of the factors within corruption, nepotism. Many of the institutions which would have, or many of the institutions which would have been able to negotiate good deals, they have been disorganized by the leadership. You find the wrong people in the wrong places because of nepotism. Number two, if a deal is to be negotiated, and it has to be negotiated in London or in Washington, the institutions concerned will not even bother to take the right technical people because it involves allowances, it will involve someone close to the powers, and then another one close to the powers, then they will take the people who do not even have the capacity to negotiate. Most of these deals, the way my brother has said, most of these deals, when they come out, you find that the country has been disadvantaged. The continent is being disadvantaged because the people who are negotiating are not the right negotiation. They are not the right people to negotiate because of the corruption, the nepotism, and everything. So there is nepotism, and then there is a kickback. Mm-hmm. They negotiate those who get the chance to go there because they know they're above the law. They will be able, instead of negotiating for the interests of the country, they negotiate for their kickback. That is why you find most of the deals which the continent is getting, they are all come in a disadvantaged form. Yes. Apart from that, apart from the deals are on, even straight agreements which are made bilateral or only between multilateral, still our countries don't have the capacity. For example, look at one open one. 2000, U.S. gives AGOA to Africa. It gives countries like Uganda the ability to provide goods and make money. 15 years, Uganda is not able to benefit from the AGOA program. Right now, after 15 years, they are complaining about the conditions, and they are saying they need to renegotiate the condition. This is when they are realizing that within the AGOA program itself, there are things which they should have looked at, which they never looked at. 15 years, where were they in 2000 when the program was being initiated? So you can see how far we have gone in our lack of capacity, and then also in the way in which we don't have the appropriate manpower to do the negotiation.
Douglas, let me give you. It's a very important point that Suleiman is raising. Accountability and transparency. These are very important parameters, especially when governments are the ones who are negotiating on behalf of the people. Now, let me give you an example. In 2009, 2010. An Indian company called Karaturi decided to invest in the agriculture sector in Ethiopia, in the western part of the country, where water and transportation facilities are provided by the Ethiopian government. This company was given the deal of a century. I actually have copies of the deal that were leaked out. You're looking at at the time, they were getting 1 hectare of land for the price of 1 kilo of beans. Okay? And they were getting tax breaks for 10 years.
Yes.
And everything that they produced was to be exported. Now, this was the deal. That was leaked out. It has government stamps, ministers signing on it. Now, let me tell you the deal on the other side of Karaturi. Karaturi no longer works in Ethiopia, by the way, right now. They've pulled out. Farmers were resettled. 70% of people had to be resettled in the Gambela region to make room for Karaturi to do its massive operation. You know, the government promised jobs for the
people locally. Mm. Mm. They also hoped to get a much needed foreign capital, foreign exchange, dollars, euros, to be coming into government coffers. Now, the business deal for Karaturi was, which was a publicly traded company in India based in Dubai, they were trading at 0.7%, 0.7 rupees per stock. Mm-hmm. After this deal, they were trading at 22 rupees. Mm. The people who invested first dumped their stock and walked away at mm-hmm. that point. Mm-hmm. Now, the money has already been made in the stock market. 70% of the people of Gambella were displaced for a deal mm-hmm. that went bust.
Yes.
Now, this kind, I'm not saying these are the only types of deals that are happening. There's so many wonderful deals that governments are making. The most important thing here is, how do you profile a company? How do you analyze the business risk you're taking when you are trading with a multinational company, a startup? Mm-hmm. Because they're doing exactly the same thing, Douglas. Mm-hmm. You know, there's jobs for Africans like you and me if we're a little bit business savvy. Mm-hmm. Political risk analysts. They hire some of the best consultants to make sure how a deal would go through in Uganda, mm-hmm. how a deal would go through in Ethiopia, who they need to talk to, and who these people are, mm-hmm. what they need. If they have to corrupt, they will. If it's an ideology, they will jump behind that ideology. Mm-hmm. But when we are negotiating on the part of, you know, the people of an African country mm-hmm. or the continent for that matter, there needs to be an understanding. We need to profile these companies, what their interests are, and we have to see if their interests align with ours. Mm. If their stakeholder interests align with our people's interests.
That's right.
Because these are two important positions that we need to take when we do negotiations with businesses.
Well, let's first remind our listeners that in case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about Africa's business strategy and global engagement. And our panelists here are my colleague, Henok Fente of VOA Horn Service, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, here in Washington. Suleiman, you had the Fente's talk, I mean, Henok's take on that thing. But the point here, most people have pointed out, is the correlation between poor governance vis-a-vis the ability or the capability to strike deals that are in the interest of the country other than for personal aggrandizement. So maybe you can take it from there.
Precisely. Our leadership has been so weak, and over a period. Before even I go to our leadership, I want to add on my brother Bente's point. It is not only in Ethiopia. In Uganda, we had they had a deal for AGOA. Mm-hmm. Some company, Tristar Apple, came from Sri Lanka. It made a deal with the government. Government even gave them money up front to start a clothing factory so that they can start manufacturing clothes specifically for what?
For AGOA.
For AGOA. Mm-hmm. Government itself gave money to them. Hmm? Imagine a deal being made. They are given all the facilities. They are given the institutions where they are going. On top of that, they are even given the money. They employed about 1,400 Ugandans to start on working. How many years did it take? Down the line, they disappeared in thin air.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Another one came. So these many deals, when you look in Uganda, in the oil industry, there has been a chain of disorganized deals. All of them shady, one after the other. It shows you the government itself is very weak. To go back to the leadership, which I have said that it has been weak for quite a long time. Remember that this Road deals have not started now. Remember, the biggest loss which Africa has ever incurred was in the 1990s, when they came with the structural adjustment programs. Our leaders never scrutinized the structural adjustment program. They couldn't read between the lines. They couldn't see what disadvantages. They could not foresee what disadvantage those reforms which they are going to carry out were going to affect to affect the economies of Africa. In countries, many countries, they ended up selling all the state corporations, some of them which are so strategic to the economy. Without them, you cannot run an economy in a poor country. Mm-hmm. How can you sell electricity generation anyhow, without reading, seeing how you are going to protect the economy? So this one has been going on and on. I don't know whether we need a new generation of leaders to be able to start getting deals. But at the core of everything is the poor leadership which we have, especially those who are not elected, those who elected themselves through the gun when they actually know nothing. All what they know are the guns. So long as they insist to lead when they don't do anything, the countries are going to continue going into those road deals which they are getting.
Yeah, so Henoch, sincerely, is there a way that you can have a dictatorial regime that can strike good deals? And maybe you can also address the devastating impact of structural adjustment programs of the 1990s.
Well, I think, you know, regarding the structural adjustment, it's been discussed. A lot of African leaders have spoken about it. You know, it was the Washington consensus that brought about, you know, some of the unwarranted and not well-studied programs that were being implemented throughout the continent. And, you know, everybody admits that it has failed. So I won't dwell much on that. But I want to talk about how important and significant it is for Africans to be engaged now. Mm. If our leadership, whether democratically elected, corrupt or transparent, or if we have a form of governance that is highly authoritarian, people need to be engaged because it matters. Each and every
except that
African nation.
Engaging a dictatorial regime is not as easy as you know.
Yeah.
It is not as easy. But also, think about it this way. Each and every government, the government of Uganda has a credit card that the people of Uganda are going to pay.
That's true.
Uganda has entered the international bond market. Ethiopia entered the international bond market. That means these governments are selling bonds and they're borrowing, hoping that the population is going to pay it. Mm-hmm. $1 billion for Ethiopia. And all these credit rating agencies, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, are coming up with ratings for each and every country. And they're rating, you know, they're giving, for example, Ethiopia is a B, Uganda is a B plus, Ghana is a B minus. There is a credit card that these government officials are using, and we are the ones who are paying. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one way of looking at it. Now, the other one is there is significant amount of investment coming into the continent. It's also monitoring these investments and making good deals. And people need to engage at the civil society level. Anybody that's in government needs to think about this because, you know, as they say, a population that has nothing to eat eats its leaders. Mm. And in the end, when resources are constrained and this government, God forbid, if they default on their debt and the economy stops growing at a high rate that it's growing in Uganda, you're looking at 5.5% to 6%, Ethiopia, even more than that, Rwanda, booming. So all these booming economies are going to stall if these governments are not making good deals, making good decisions. And we're heavily indebted. Uganda every year borrows
31% of its GDP.
Okay, it's approaching 50 now, about 50% now.
50%. Well, they're admitting 30%. So you can imagine it's more. Ethiopia admits 29%. I think it's even more. So, and we're paying for all of that.
Yeah, so now we're winding up because we're running out of time. Some people have said that with the scramble for Africa, in the past used to be East-West, it remained the superpower, they trade with the West. Now China is coming in, India is coming in, Israel and all other countries are coming in, but that people must believe that we're having the short end of the stick. Briefly, 10 seconds, what's your general view, Suleiman? Just 10 seconds, we're running out of time.
Yes, we have got a short end of the stick because we are desperate. Our economies have been devastated. They were devastated, first of all, by the post-independence. Then we go to the structure adjustment program. It is a one-way traffic. So sadly, we have got poor leadership, which is also predatory, which is blind, which, as we said, if it is a democratic leadership, like recently in South Africa, we had an electricity crisis, and Eskom wanted to take a loan from the IMF. It had to be discussed, and it went slow on the deal because the whole country was engaged. But if you have got leaders like those ones of Uganda, Gambia, which say every wealth in the country belongs to him and is the one who distributes, you cannot have good deals. Mm-hmm. So China is also taking an advantage because we have got desperate and predatory leadership. Some of them dictators do not have the interests of the countries at heart.
I see. Last word, Henok.
This is wonderful news for me. Mm-hmm. I like to see the Chinese coming in with their money. I like to see the Turkish coming in with their textile knowledge and investment. I'd like to see the U.S. Companies coming in with their power, new technology, and whatever technology that they're bringing in, capital that they're bringing with them. European Union, please come and let's do business. This is wonderful news. We need capital. And the capital is not... Let me finish. The capital is not going to be only raised locally, which is also very important, but we need these investments. The question is this. These investments, when you're looking at an opportunity, there is several challenges. Mm. And these challenges need to be mitigated by the leaders themselves. They need to have a thorough understanding of the kind of deals that they're getting themselves and, most importantly, the country into. Mm. People need to engage, question, throughout all levels, the kind of deals that are being made in Africa.
Okay.
The media needs to closely scrutinize these deals, expose it to the population, and people really need to have an understanding of what it means, what they're gaining, and what they're losing at the end of the day.
Suleiman.
The dictators cannot accept to be engaged. They have literally mortgaged the countries.
I see.
Because of, if you look at the debt which we have, the level of indebtedness, these dictators need to go before we take any step forward.
I see. Well, this is a big topic to discuss, and maybe we shall revisit it at some other time. But for now, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Our producer was Jackson Mfunganyi, as usual. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mfuga, wishing you all the best.